Good morning, it's Maryland Morning on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. In April, Montgomery County Police picked up two children on their way home from a park in downtown Silver Spring. Their parents, Alexander and Danielle Maytive, said they were unable to find their kids for more than 6 hours as their 10-year-old son, Rafi, and 6-year-old daughter, Dvorah, sat in a police cruiser, then in a police station and in the custody of County Child Protective Services. Charges of child neglect were dropped 2 weeks ago. But the Maytives' situation sparked a national conversation about what parenting styles we value as a society. And it raised important questions about when parenting crosses the line from hands-off to irresponsible. Here's part of how ABC News in April covered the debate surrounding the Maytives' kids and whether they should be allowed to walk home from school alone.
Two police cars pull up over here.
The Montgomery County Police gave the kids, ages 6 and 10, a stern warning.
It made me feel annoyed and embarrassed.
The cops reported the parents to Child Protective Services, who threatened to take the kids away.
Maryland parents are accused of child neglect after allowing their two kids to walk home alone from a park about a mile away.
Suddenly, this middle-class suburban family found themselves smack in the middle of a national debate about parenting.
Now summer is here. Kids have more free time. So we're revisiting the conversation we had in April about what kind of parenting, play, and approach to childhood free time is productive for children. We spoke with Katie Robinson, a parent and social worker who runs a consulting firm that works with families on childhood behavioral issues, and also with Patricia Cronin, executive director since 1999 of The Family Tree. It's a nonprofit in Baltimore that works to prevent child abuse and neglect. The Maytives' children were 10 and 6 in April. I asked Patricia Cronin to tell us what signposts parents might see developmentally at those ages to know whether their kids are ready for less supervision.
Well, they should look for how they make decisions. Simple things that they do around the house, if they can follow tasks in the house, and it's, you know, a good idea that they would be able to follow instructions when they're not in the house. If they're able to do a couple of tasks at a time, then they probably could cross the street safely. So I think parents can observe their children right under their own supervision in their home and their yard and begin to make judgments about how they could approach tasks when they're not away from them.
Katie, what can kids learn being on their own that they can't learn in a classroom or in something in a structured play?
I think that kids learn from each other very differently than they learn from adults. Adults can be very quick to help. Not that children don't do the same thing necessarily, but kids working together or kids being on their own just means that they have to be more reliant on themselves, right? They have to figure out if they're frustrated, how they push through frustration to either solve a problem or decide that it's too difficult for them. They have to start making decisions for themselves and really test their capability. Not that it wouldn't happen if adults were around or if they were supervised. It's not impossible that those two things coincide. But giving them a little more space to do it on their own means that they will just have more opportunity to figure out what they're capable of doing.
Do kids who are allowed periods of unsupervised play experience less anxiety?
We know for certain that children who don't benefit from play with their peers, that those children do suffer all kinds of problems, that play is an essential part of a child's cognitive growth, their academic growth, and really helps spur brain development. So it is an essential building block. And sometimes in our rush for kids to grow academically, we forget that. So I think I think that it certainly helps them emotionally and to deal with all kinds of things. It's their work. It's their work. Play is a child's work.
The events were the second time the Maytives had a run-in with Montgomery County Child Protective Services. Something similar took place last December, and the Maytives after that were found responsible for, quote, unsubstantiated, close quote, child neglect. Patricia, both times the police got involved after a concerned neighbor called the police.
Yeah.
How important is having a community to fostering both safety and constructive experiences where kids can be unsupervised?
Parents rely on people in the community to look out for their kids. We can't expect government to be take the role in keeping our children safe. So I think the community members are really important to provide that safety net because parents cannot be the eyes all the time.
I agree with that. And I read a quote from the mother, Mrs. Maytive, saying that the reason that she feels strongly about allowing her kids to explore the world as they do, and sometimes on their own, is because she wants to show them that she trusts them. And I think that in communities, we also would like to show our kids that they should trust other adults, and we would like to show other adults that we trust them too, because we're letting our children walk down the block in front of their house, whatever it may be. If they do see something wrong, then we hope that we can all be working together, you know, to watch out for the kids, but that we trust each other, right? The only way to kind of foster trust is to try it out, is to
embrace it.
Exactly. Give a little bit. Sometimes you have to act like you trust a little more than you actually do to really test it.
On WIPR, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Katie Robinson, a parent and social worker who works with families on childhood behavioral issues, and Patricia Cronin, executive director of the Family Tree, a nonprofit in Baltimore. She studied psychology and early childhood education as well as social work. How can the broader community, police force, social services, neighbors, friends, be aware when less supervision becomes neglect?
Well, I think just simple questioning, you know, asking a child, where are your parents? You know, can you call them if you are severely concerned? We don't have a total agreement about what neglect looks like unless it's very obvious, you know, unless a child is not dressed or doesn't have medical care or clothes. If it's a child, you know, find out where their adult is. And I don't think we necessarily have to assume that a child's neglected. If the parent isn't right there, I think that we can assume to get that child to a caregiver that will provide safety to them.
Let's hear from something Danielle Maytiv told the Washington Post.
For us, free-range kids means nothing very radical. It means we're giving our children the childhood that we had, the idea that kids can be trusted to go down the block, to play at the park, to walk home from school. So we let them, you know, within carefully defined boundaries, walk around outside, play outside, interact with people, basically encounter the world on their own.
Katie, how did the free range label come about if a generation ago kids had far more freedom than they do today? I mean, I remember when I was growing up, yeah. I walked alone. I rode my bicycle miles away from mm-hmm. home at age probably 7, 8, 9.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those definitely seem to be the stories, yes.
So how did this free range tag come to be?
It seems to me, right, that there has been, as maybe suburbs have grown or the need for cars have grown or whatever it may be, competition has grown in schools and expectations for kids. There's been more focus on, right, structured activities, making sure that your kid has a certain amount of extracurricular activities, certain things like this that we want to prepare them for the world, and the world is getting harder. So letting them be by themselves or on their own seems to be a risk that we can't take. There has been a talk of helicopter parenting.
Which is sort of the reverse.
Right, yeah. Right. That I think, to my knowledge, that vernacular was around prior to this free range idea.
I think so too.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know if free range is a result of or a kind of a reaction to what we think of as helicopter parenting, or tiger momming is also another way that we call it. But it seems to me somebody finally is kind of pushing back against the direction that especially middle class parents seem to be going in, which is, you know, more structure, more activity, more supervision and parental eyes. And they're kind of going in the opposite direction, and that's causing this strange imbalance.
Well, and certainly much of this is parental philosophy. Some of it, though, is in law. What does state law actually tell parents about when it's okay to have an older child supervising a younger child?
Maryland gives us guidance that children under 8 need to be supervised by another child at least 13 or another adult. So, and that's, you know, guidance because obviously that has to, you have to have the assumption that the 13-year-old is competent to do so. So, but that's pretty much what our state would offer.
So, takeaway thoughts. If you're a parent who values what you're hearing but is also concerned about safety, what are some suggestions for such parents about how to incorporate values of self-reliance and independence and exploration and still keep your kids safe?
Well, I think parents know their children the best, and they have to really honor the values in their family and their community. So they need to really understand just what their child is capable of, what kind of directions they're able to follow, what kind of peer pressure they're able to respond to, particularly as children get a little bit older. They're much more at risk to respond to peer pressure more so than what the instructions the parent gave them. So I think the parent has to really assess what the child is capable of and the decisions that they can make, what they could do if there was a problem, an unavoidable problem or an unexpected problem, and just say how they handle that and make those kinds of decisions and then try it out in small ways before a big task is given them.
Katie, what are your takeaway thoughts?
It's basically that too. Practice. You can practice any of these ideas in very small bits. You can practice at home. You can, if you always check on your child after 5 minutes of them playing by themselves in another room, stretch it to six. Try out 10 one day. See what happens. You know, you don't have to send them out into the world just to make them more independent. You can take steps back to give them more room, even while you're still operating in the same space. You can trust them to start on their homework by themselves without first reading the directions with them. You know, little ways you can take steps back that really will help kids grow without demanding that they go to the park by themselves.
Yeah. I think parents want their children to be resilient and capable, and there are lots of strategies that parents can deploy for that to happen. And I think families have to make those decisions that they're comfortable with and they're willing to take those kinds of responsibilities.
Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
It was a pleasure.
Katie Robinson is a parent and social worker. She works with families on childhood behavioral issues. Patricia Cronin is executive director of the nonprofit The Family Tree for more than 15 years. We spoke in April. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass. There's more ahead. Stay with us on 88.1.